So Paula comes to us from the Boston area. She is on the public health faculty at Tufts Medical School. And in 2001, she brought together family medicine faculty and disability advocates to create a disability curriculum where people with disabilities are involved as medical educators. Her research integrates the fields of health services research, public health, and health behavior to support efforts to improve the health status of adults and children with disabilities through receipt of health services and supports for health behaviors. So we welcome Paula to the panel. Our next speaker, going in order, is Suzanne Levy. And Suzanne is a certified neurodevelopmental disabilities. Says you're certified in that. It's a subspecialty. Maybe there's a typo in what I printed out. So she's an associate professor of pediatrics at UPenn and associate division chief for child development at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. And her research interests include early identification of autism spectrum disorders, or ASD, epidemiology of ASD, and complementary and alternative medical treatments. She's active in policy and advocacy on a local, regional, and national level. And in December 2012, she will be completing her MPH program. So we're excited about that for you as well. And our next speaker is Ritika Buell. Am I saying that at all correctly?
Ritika.
Ritika? All right. I practiced that. Thanks. So Ritika is pursuing her PhD in health behavior from Indiana University in Bloomington, and she was awarded the Master's in Public Health in 2005. She graduated from Grant Medical College in India with a bachelor's degree in medicine and surgery and worked as a junior resident in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology. Her work is in the area of reproductive health, especially for women with developmental disabilities, and it forms the core of her research and career interests. We welcome all of our distinguished presenters to the panel today, and without further ado, we welcome Suzanne to the podium.
And I just hit the return.
Okay. Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. A couple years ago, I was in attendance at the Met Opera in New York, and Placido Domingo and Susan Graham were there. And right before they came out to sing, the announcer said, both of these singers are indisposed because of a cold, so please be indulgent of them. So I'd like to ask you the same thing. One of the things that they did after that announcement, they went out and sang their hearts out, and so I'm going to try to do the same thing, not being able to breathe very well today. I'd like to start out by acknowledging my co-authors, Elizabeth Blunt, Heather Morozen, and Lisa Wetzel Effinger, all of whom either are or have been in the past at Villanova University College of Nursing. I'd like to declare that the authors have no conflicts of interest. This project is sponsored by the Inglis Foundation, an Inglis Foundation Innovation Award, and a HRSA grant. The number is up there. There have been repeated calls to action, including two Surgeon General reports, one IOM report, the National Council on Disability report, and the World Health Organization report on disability, all of which have recommended several key actions to improve the health of people with disabilities. Among those recommendations was that greater attention be paid to the health of people with disabilities in health professions education and training programs in order to improve the care of people with disabilities. Studies conducted in a number of healthcare professions have demonstrated that the health and healthcare of people with disabilities are often ignored. The attention given in healthcare professions education typically ranges from a high of sparse to a low of non-existent. The healthcare of people with disabilities, as everybody in this room knows, continues to be problematic and of lower quality than the healthcare presented or provided, rather, to people without disabilities. Disability-related content, as I say, is very sparse to non-existent. The Affordable Care Act is expected to increase the use of nurse practitioners in providing health care across the board and to people who are underserved. Our studies, the studies that we have done with baccalaureate nursing education programs, have found that programs devote little attention to preparing graduates to care for people with disabilities. As a result, people who graduate from those programs go on to enter their master's programs to become nurse practitioners with little previous experience or training in providing care for people with disabilities. There are a number of studies, and people in this room have conducted some of these studies, that have addressed medical education, and we have conducted studies on undergraduate nursing education to see what those programs do relative to the topic of disability. There has, however, been no study that has looked at nurse practitioners. And that gets us to the present study. The purpose of this study was to examine the integration of disability-related content in a national sample of nurse practitioner programs or curricula. We also wanted to fill a significant gap in order to increase our knowledge about what is and what is not addressed. We used a 34-item online survey that was developed based on our previous work with undergraduate nursing programs. We modified it in order to fit nurse practitioner education. This instrument was developed with the input of people with disabilities to ensure that it was sensitive to people with disability and it was complete. And as I say, we modified it to address issues specific to the nurse practitioner programs because what nurse practitioners do is somewhat different than what nurses do if they're graduates of undergraduate programs. We used SurveyMonkey in order to administer the survey. We sent the survey initially to the directors of 330 existing nurse practitioner programs through an organization called the National Organization of Nurse Practitioner Faculty. We had a very meager, at best, response rate, and as a consequence decided that we needed to do something else in order to increase our sample. So we then invited individual members of a nurse practitioner organization to identify faculty and in order to increase our sample size. So what we did with that second list was to eliminate duplicate zip codes so that we ended up with a single program or a single completed survey from each of the nurse practitioner programs of those that responded. Our final sample then consisted of 111 schools that represented 34% of nursing programs across the country. In terms of data analysis, we used descriptive statistics and chi-square analysis to analyze the quantitative data. There were some questions that were qualitative in nature, and so we reported those data as frequencies and used content analysis. Our sample, as I say, was comprised of 111 schools that were represented. Many of the people were nurse practitioner directors or coordinators. Some of them were coordinators of a track within the nurse practitioner programs, and others were faculty members not in a coordinator or a director position. They had been in their position about 7.5 years. Their length of time in those positions ranged from 6 months to 28 years. The number of graduates of NP programs ranged from 5 to 225 per year. I don't know how they do that, with an average of 41.7, and I think that was largely because of the school that had 225 students had pulled the mean way up. We asked, as I say, we asked a number of questions. One of the questions was, what model of disability was used in teaching? And as you can see from this slide, 85.5% indicated that they used the medical model of disability. In truth, I think what they were doing was using the medical model, period. I don't think they used the medical model of disability. And as you can see down the line, the others, you know, drop off dramatically. I think the data on this particular question I think are particularly interesting because 21.6% of them indicated that they use the interface model of disability. It would be my conjecture that most of them don't know what the interface model of disability is. For those of you who don't know, it is a model that was developed by a nurse from the UK And it refers to the interface of the medical diagnosis and the disability, which is where the word interface comes from. The next slide, I think, is also related to models, and I think it's particularly interesting. 73% indicated that they use multiple models of disability. 69.4% indicated that they used all models of disability. And then they added some additional models. So we'll talk about what's going on here a little bit later. The types of nurse practitioner tracks in these programs, family nurse practitioners were the most common. The lowest was neonatal nurse practitioners, and then everything in between. The number of tracks within a particular program ranged all over the map. Most programs or typically had 1 to 3 tracks, 4 or more tracks, 30.6% of the schools had them. As I say, they're all over the map. Some had 1, some had 7. Okay, let's get to some of the questions. We asked what kind of populations of people with disabilities they addressed in their programs. I'm not going to read all these to you, but 74.3%, that was the most common group identified by the respondents. Elderly persons, persons with cognitive and intellectual disabilities, children and infants with disabilities, and persons with developmental disabilities. Those were on the upper end in terms of the most frequently cited. Those that were the least often cited included people with impaired communication, women with disabilities, men with disabilities, and we were asking there specifically about whether or not they addressed gender-specific health issues for people with disabilities. Persons who are nonverbal and minority ethnic groups with disabilities, those were on the lower end. We also asked about the topics that they talked about. 29 topics were in the offing. The most often included topics like the impact of disability on growth and development, definitions of disability impairment, etc., barriers encountered by people with disabilities, personal, economic, and social costs of disability, and the effects of disability on healthcare access. Slightly more than half did that. Topics that were least often addressed included prevention of secondary conditions, disability etiquette, sexual abuse, pregnancy, parenting by men and women with disabilities, way down in the vicinity of 6.7 and 5.8. We asked, where in the curriculum do you address these topics? There were 7 possibilities. The most common was the physical assessment lecture and lab, and then they go down from there. Other areas where people talked about, and these were single responses, fill in the blank kind of thing, where people said that they talked about disability was in pathophysiology, but they did not talk about disability. So how they could talk about disability within pathophysiology but without talking about disability is beyond my comprehension. Pharmacology, interesting. Women's health and chronic illness courses. Some of the, as I say, some of the fill-in-the-blanks were kind of interesting, and this last response that I'm about to tell you was almost embarrassing to say. Somebody said that they taught about disability when they taught about how to get a hang tag for accessible parking. So you can see why I'm embarrassed to even say that. And I don't know if that was the only place that person, you know, that person's program did it. I think it was. We asked the question in terms of effectiveness. How effective is your program in addressing gender-specific health issues and health screening? The numbers here, I want to point out that these are people who said their programs were ineffective. They were not effective. And so 71% said their programs were not effective in addressing specific health promotion needs of men with disabilities. 53.8% reported that they were ineffective, not effective, in addressing specific health promotion needs of women with disabilities, pelvic exams, mammography, etc. We asked about facilitators and we asked about barriers. Facilitators, people said, you know, the respondents said things like faculty members' awareness, the expertise and interest, and new awareness that disability is missing from the curriculum because they took the survey. that they had seen the survey. Some people couldn't identify a single facilitator. And then you can see some of the others in there in terms of the mandates of the ADA. But only one person said that. Not very many people did, just one. Barriers, this is not a surprise. We hear this in almost every sector. 66.2% of the respondents, and only 68% answered this question, indicated that it was a lack of time and too packed a curriculum in order to teach about disability. And then, again, the percent drops way down. Lack of faculty with expertise, lack of curricular materials, lack of awareness on the issue, and lack of appropriate clinical placements. And then there were a lot of additional barriers identified by individuals. And some of these I just want to point out because I think they're particularly interesting. Some people said they didn't teach it at the master's level in the NP program because they believed that it was discussed well at the undergraduate program. They haven't read my article, obviously. There's an emphasis of the NP program on wellness. And the reason that I think that's interesting is that what that means is that they can't see wellness and disability in the same sentence. And somebody said that their program prepares generalists, not specialists. Our belief is that everybody needs to have some background in the area of disability. One of the other questions we asked was, in terms of the amount of time spent on disability topics, where do you think your time fits? The options were far too little, about right, too much, and far, far too much. The vertical axis is the percentage. The lower, the horizontal axis are the different categories. And as you can see, not too many people said they spend too much time or far too much time on their talking about this issue. 17.1 thought they got it just right. And you can see the percents of people who said they spent far too little time or too little time, which adds up to 82.8%. I think if they had been asked that question prior to taking the survey, they might have all said it was about right. So I think some people, you know, came to the realization that maybe they weren't spending the right amount of time on this. We asked them about attitudes. Did they assess their students' attitudes towards disability? About 20% did, and they didn't use, you know, the usual surveys that exist out there. They were sort of coming up with their own strategies on doing this. In terms of the summary, what do all these things, all these data mean? Well, the results were very disappointing, but they were not surprising, unfortunately. The medical model of disability, rather than one that's more acceptable, is the one that they identified using. The PACT curriculum is not a surprise. It was the most common reason used or identified. An overwhelming majority, 82.8%, devoted too little time or far too little time to discussion of disability. Significant groups of people with disabilities and important issues are not being addressed. Many faculty are unaware of the attitudes, positive or negative, of their NP students towards people with disabilities. In terms of conclusion and implications, there's a great deal of room for improvement in preparing NP students who are going to become major providers to people with disabilities in the future. With a growing number of NP programs preparing NPs, and there is a growing number of them, there is an urgent need to address the care of people with disabilities. Teaching materials and strategies that do not disrupt the existing curricula need to be developed and disseminated widely. Clearly, one of the things that most of us have learned in the area of education is if you suggest to people that they have to change their curriculum, the door is shut and you will never be able to make a change. So it has to be done within the curriculum. Just the last point, without major changes in NP programs related to care of people with disabilities, the picture will remain the same. NPs will enter the program with little knowledge or skills related to care of people with disabilities, and unfortunately, they will graduate from these programs and enter practice without the knowledge or skill that they need. Thank you.